In Our Travels, 1936 brings us into Waterford Union, and for the first time to the coast. We come to Annstown, where the lovely little church sort of dominates the village and stands astride the nearby lovely beach. There's something special about Annstown, I think, because apart from all else, it's the only church, place of worship in that particular community. There aren't any others, so there's a certain sense, I think, of it being cherished by everybody there. Places like Annstown also remind us that one of the joys of this diocese is how within it we have so many of the beaches and beauty spots of the coast of the southeast. And in that setting, we therefore still have a significant holiday ministry to visitors who pass by, to people who have holiday homes, to people who include spiritual refreshment as part of their holiday refreshment, to people who may themselves feel they're somehow too busy to go to church much when they're at home in the cities, but make a point of coming to our churches when they are unwinding and in need of peace and refreshment. And we shouldn't forget that very much part of what we are, even yet in the southeast, is this distinctive ministry to those who come to our coastal holiday places like Annstown. 1936, in the month of May, it saw the abolition, and in those times this didn't require a popular referendum, the abolition of the old Senate, the first Senate of the Free State. De Valera, who was in power, had regarded that body very much as a transitional thing which had a specific purpose in the early years of the new Free State. It was to be a place where particularly the old Southern Unionist voice might feel included and heard. And so, as it were, 20 Protestant members were part of that old Senate in its beginnings. And within it, remarkable voices were heard, particularly associated with what one might describe as the old aristocracy of the land. But De Valera felt the transitional purpose had been achieved, that the Senate by the late 30s was perhaps frustrating his legislative agenda, particularly as he prepared for major constitutional reform, and so it was abolished. And under the new constitution was replaced in 1937, by the body we still know as the Senedd, which he felt would be much more capable of being dominated, frankly, by the political parties. There'd be 11 direct nominees of the Taoiseach, and although the members would, on the face of it, be drawn from specific vocational panels, nevertheless, the choices would largely be under the control of the politicians who comprise the electorate through membership of the Oireachtas or of the local authorities. One thing that did survive, interestingly, into the new, the present Senedd was university representation, with three each from the universities existing at the time, the University of Dublin, Trinity College, and the National University of Ireland. There will be arguments about over whether it is appropriate to have graduates of third level institutions finding a voice in the upper house, although undoubtedly they have contributed some very distinguished voices. But the really unsatisfactory thing, objectively at this stage, is that no voices have been added to represent graduates of the newer universities, the many of them that have come into existence in Ireland since 1937. So university representation remains confined to the NUI and the University of Dublin, and that surely is unfair. There were arguments in 1936, and indeed more recently, over the very principle of having a two-chambered parliament. Is it a good thing? Does it provide for greater scrutiny of legislation? Is it a place where you can assemble experts from academia, from economics, from industry, who mightn't otherwise have their voices heard, who wouldn't necessarily be easily elected to the directly elected lower house? So there have been arguments over the years about, is bicameral parliamentary government a good thing? Surprisingly, in a recent referendum, the present Senate survived. I think the government of the day just assumed people would wish to abolish it, and they probably didn't take the trouble of arguing their case very convincingly, and perhaps people began to worry about whether it was right hastily to throw away the principle of having a two-chambered parliament. And sometimes the present Senate has shown a great capacity for scrutiny. For example, whether or not you like the recent judicial appointments bill, it certainly was scrutinised ad nauseam in the Senate. However, while people seem to agree that checks and balances are good within the Oireachtas, that a place of expert scrutiny is important, and that some fine voices have emerged even from the present Senate, there never seems to be the sustained political will to reshape the Senate to serve truly the needs of the time. And one thing that surely needs attention is this. It is possible, because of the way the timing of Senate elections is currently mandated, to lose your seat in the Dáil and then a little later to manage to be elected to the Senate. And so it becomes seen as a place for political survivors who didn't get into the lower house. Surely the two houses should be elected at the same time. A sense of offering oneself to make a contribution in the Senate should be seen as a, as it were, political calling that is sufficient in itself, and that those who are in the Senate should be people who are truly experts in their field, who can helpfully scrutinise legislation that comes up from the lower house, rather than being simply also-rans who didn't manage to get into that lower house.